WHYY is proudly supported by Penn Medicine. From groundbreaking discoveries to life-saving care, Penn Medicine's innovation is helping to change lives, one moment, one treatment, one patient at a time.
This is Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross. My guest, Kailar Broaddus, is one of the 11 transgender people profiled in the new HBO documentary, The Trans List, which premieres tonight. Broaddus is a lawyer who began his professional life working in a financial institution, but when he decided to come out and transition to male, it changed his professional path too, and he became an activist. He founded the Trans People of Color Coalition. He worked as the senior policy counsel at the National LGBTQ Task Force and the director of its Transgender Civil Rights Project. In 2012, he made history as the first openly transgender person to testify before the U.S. Senate when he spoke in support of the Employment Non-Discrimination Act. Kailar Broaddus, welcome to Fresh Air. What year were you born?
My birth date is quite remarkable because I was born on the historic day on the March on Washington by Dr. King, so August 28, 1963.
So this was before there was really a language to describe being trans.
Exactly.
And so you were trying to figure out what it was you were experiencing without a language to help you understand it and without a language to help explain it to anybody else.
Exactly.
Did that make it harder for you?
It made it extremely hard. And you're exactly right. There were no tools. There was no language. I had what is now known as the typical trans child anger because, you know, I couldn't express myself the way I wanted to be and being forced to wear things that you just knew were wrong. And it's like I didn't know where I belonged. I didn't know where I fit. And I worried about that every single day.
Where did you grow up?
I grew up in the Midwest, but, you know, Missouri, the Mason-Dixon line runs through there. So it's really like the South, very conservative. It's the buckle of the Bible Belt.
Small town?
And small town, 2,000, 2,500 people, something like that, I think. And, you know, my family was well-known, good family, good people, hardworking people, and still are.
So you were born on the day of the Martin Luther King-led March on Washington. So you grew up in this atmosphere of the civil rights movement. You're African-American. Your parents, you say, were children of slaves. So it's like, you know, people are fighting for civil rights. African-Americans are fighting for civil rights. But no one's fighting for your right to be a trans person and to be out about it. So what was your relationship to the civil rights movement then that was kind of fighting for your freedom, but only for part of it?
Well, I took power from the civil rights movement because race was also a part of me. And honestly, a lot of days, because I've always been out, I didn't know whether it was my race or my transgenderness that offended people more. And honestly, there were days that I felt like the racism preceded my transness in the way people interacted with me.
You became a corporate lawyer.
I worked at a large financial institution and was working my way, through the process to getting to the corporate law department. So to be quite clear about that. And in the process of getting there, didn't make it there.
Yes, well, thank you for clarifying it. And this would probably have been during the Dress for Success era when women were wearing like navy blue skirted suits with little ties, you know, like little bowed, not bow ties, but, you know, ties tied in a bow at the neck.
Yes, you're taking me back there. Yes, I'm with you. Yes.
Yeah. So, how did you have to wear those clothes?
Yes, I did, and I'm almost having an attack here now. post-traumatic
stress. Sorry to put you through that.
Yeah, and it was an ordeal because it had always been to try to wear feminine attire because whenever I would do it, number one, little kids would come up to me and say, "Sir, why are you wearing a dress?" And that would be embarrassing in front of my corporate coworkers, number one. And then I would just try to ignore that. Number two, it was just uncomfortable for me. It wasn't natural. It was not innate. And so I would like run out of the building at the end of the day or whatever meeting we had. And I felt like Superman in the car because I got to the parking lot and I would be stripping off those clothes as soon as I could get them off. And then the whole pantyhose thing, you know, and, you know, it just didn't work. And I don't think I was a very attractive woman because my spirit and soul were not that at all.
Was there a turning point where you decided you were going to come out as trans? And was there a word yet that you knew of to describe yourself, to describe your gender?
It got, well, for my era, yeah. I came out early for my era, which was near my late 20s. That's when I decided this was it. So it's the early 90s when I started the process of doing the hormones slowly. We were then under the impression, some of us, if we slowly did stuff and gradually did it, that like nobody would notice. But the thing is, with trans people, we all come out publicly. There is no hidden way to come out as a trans person. People notice things. And even though I was masculine, and I'd already been wearing the haircut, but, you know, people did start to notice that, you know, I squared out a little bit more. And I took a lot of crap because, you know, I was out when lots of people weren't. And at that time, everybody was losing their jobs. If you came out, you lost your job.
Well, you lost your job, didn't you?
Yes, I did. So then I hung out my shingle and started to fight for laws and represent tons of transgender people and LGB people as well who couldn't find legal representation because lawyers weren't even taking cases. So we've come a long way to where now I have people that weren't taking those cases call me for expertise on those types of cases. And, you know, we mainstream some of that stuff. But again, we still have a long way to go.
So you were actually one of the people on stage with President Obama when he signed an executive order protecting LGBT workers. So explain what that executive order does.
Honored to be with him and standing with him and hoping that executive order will stay in place given the current climate that we're in. It extended protections to federal workers and then also to that folks that contract with the government for LGBTQ workers to be protected against discrimination. And the misnomer people have is that all LGBTQ people are protected on the job, and that's not true. I've represented many people that came in that weren't even LGBTQ, that just had a sticker on their vehicle because they support the cause, and were terminated because they were assumed to be or associated with.
Since you're expecting the Trump administration to certainly not be as friendly to LGBT rights as President Obama was, what are you preparing for? What do you think the trans community is preparing for legally?
Well, we are already meeting after we got over our shock and strategizing and preparing for what we can until the president-elect releases more of his policies and plans. But it's clear this administration is unaware of the LGBT community's concerns, and so we're going to have to get in the door and make that happen. And there are lots of us doing that, and we're pushing to make that happen. And we know that we're going to have to fight down negative, bad legislation. You know, there are concerns all over the place. If he attacks Obamacare, that's for the first time given trans people health care that didn't have health care before, that couldn't, that was excluded under previous policies. Trans people need jobs. We are more likely than not to be unemployed than most people due to many reasons. And so we're the vulnerable of the most vulnerable. And it doesn't seem like there's any room in the President-elect's agenda for us, but we're going to make room for that, and we have to make room and stand strong.
Do you have any friends from your childhood who knew you as a girl, and you're still friends with them, and they now know and accept you as a man?
Yes.
Was it easy for them to do that, or did you have to do a lot of it, like explaining?
Easy. Everybody said it made sense to them.
So do you think discrimination is harder to do when you actually know the person, and that when you know the person and you've known them a long time, you're just by nature more understanding of who they are?
I think so. And I've always said that. If you know the person, I think it makes life a lot easier. I was demanded to come back to my homecoming by my friends last year, and they thought I had been missing because I just was not going because I was trans, and I just was busy, and I always had something that conflicted. But I went back, and they went around and made sure everybody else was comfortable, and they didn't care, and nobody else cared, and it was just so heartwarming at my college. And then I've been given alumni recognition at both my college and my law school. And that's what it takes. It takes us knowing a trans person. And so that's why I always challenge people to do education for themselves and to get out of their comfort zone and go meet a trans person. And you probably already met one and just didn't know it. But to go really reach out and meet one and talk to them and get to know them, and I think that makes the difference. And that's what makes us change hearts and minds. And that's really it.
I want to thank you very much for talking with us.
Thank you. This is wonderful.
Kailar Broaddus is one of the transgender people profiled in the new HBO documentary, The Trans List, which premieres tonight. It was directed by Timothy Greenfield Sanders, who also took the photographic portraits in the companion book, The Trans List. Those photos are included in his exhibit, Identity, which is at the Annenberg Space for Photography in Los Angeles through February 26th.